It's a glorious sunny day as I walk along the Regent's Canal in East London towards the studio of Yinka Shonibari CBE. Yinka's best known for his figurative sculptures dressed in African batik. But he's just weeks away from his first ever print show, where 6 years of work will be revealed to the public. From the Christea Roberts Gallery, this is Making a Mark, the podcast exploring artists and their relationship to printmaking. I'm Charlotte Mullins.
When you see them in the flesh, they're an absolute knockout. The colour is so intense, and then the images are so arresting.
He lives in a world that is permanently cosmopolitan, that is richly contradictory. He's interested in how we all walk in more than one world at the same time.
There are two floors to Yinka's studio. At the moment, we're in the bottom floor, where six people are working industriously, painting masks, making quilts. There are sculptures in the background, and it's just a hive of activity. Walking into Yinka's ground floor studio, you're surrounded by countless sculptures and quilts in different stages of production.
This one?
Yeah. You're immediately struck by the vibrant colour and all the different techniques being employed. At the far end, a staircase leads up to another studio, a calm oasis by comparison, with computers in place of cutting tables. And it's here that I spot some of Yinka's latest prints. Here, hanging up very excitingly, is the new series of prints featuring African birds that are on the red list for extinction. And alongside those, we see a batik fabric put into the print and African masks. Hello, Yinka. It's lovely to meet you.
Yep. Hello. Nice to meet you.
Yinka Shonibari initially trained as a painter in the 1980s.
But then my ambitions just got bigger and I wanted to do more.
Since the 1990s, he's predominantly made sculpture and was nominated for the Turner Prize in 2004. But in recent years, he has returned to two-dimensional work. Printmaking is a collaborative process, and since 2017, Yinka has been working with master printer Pete Kosovitz at Thumbprint Editions in South London.
I'm certainly far away from where I was when I was kind of a singular painter, and I was just painting away on my own.
I can see to my right is a table with a big computer screen on it and a pen standing in a pot. Is this how you start with a print? Do you draw?
Yeah, I draw. Yeah, actually, yeah, that's what I draw. I use the tablet. I draw on the tablet. You know, that's how I do my prints. Yeah.
And so in 2017, you decided to start and design your first set of prints. Did the image come first in the studio here, or did you go to Thumbprint Studios where you work with the master printmaker there?
No, I think the image came first. You know, I always sort of visualized the kind of print I wanted and I drew it. And then, you know, and then I work with printmakers to kind of make it into reality.
To realize the print.
Yeah.
Because as you say, we've got on the wall in front of us, we have printouts, digital printouts of your ideas for prints, but working on in a print studio takes it beyond that because of the textures, the materials you use. So how did you choose to use wood print, which I believe most of your prints involve?
So the idea of the woodcuts actually came about because when I joined Christea Roberts, I was actually doing screen prints. And then the idea was to kind of experiment, not necessarily to show the works, just to see what we could do together.
Pete sat down with Yinka and they talked about how they could translate this and what would make what we call an original print. How could these ideas be translated into printmaking techniques?
David Cleeton Roberts, a partner and director at Christea Roberts Gallery, Yinka's print publisher.
What they decided to do was woodblock, because in woodblock, you're going to get a beautiful surface texture. And with woodblock, you take a piece of wood, you carve out the shapes, you carve out the images, you ink up the areas which are left in relief, and then you print them onto the paper. Now, the woodblock itself, you can play around with all sorts of different ideas with woodblock. You can use different types of wood, which has different grains. You can completely obliterate the grain by layering on such thick colour that you totally wipe out the grain. You can use some translucent ink to reveal the grain. And all these kind of ideas were really exciting to Yinka because he suddenly saw the opportunity to create multiple layers, multiple ideas on one sheet of paper. So then Pete and Juncker sat down, looked at each image individually and looked at each area and which areas would suit these different techniques on the woodblock.
The result of that initial experimentation was Cowboy Angels, a series of five relief prints with woodblock and batik fabric collage.
Can we have a look at one now?
Yeah, you can have a look.
This is archival tissue paper on the top. I'm just going to move it away and reveal a stunning print with turquoise background and a cowboy on a horse with wings.
Yes.
How did you come up with this?
Well, I mean, at the time, there was, I think Donald Trump might have just been elected or he was campaigning. But some of the stuff coming out was not exactly pleasant. And I kind of just thought about this idea of a cowboy. But then I thought, actually, you know, the cowboy doesn't have to be horrible. It can be, you know, he can have wings and it can be an angel. And that's kind of how it evolved, really.
And what's interesting about the cowboy, because it's quite a realistic looking, you can see it's a figure on a horse with the horse's reins. The wings are obviously slightly different, but the face also has a mask on it.
Yes, so, you know, because also it was a time of Black Lives Matter as well. So the idea of actually somebody that might be opposed to immigration then finding themselves incorporated by that culture or being drawn in by wearing the mask. So I've kind of made... So it's almost like a paradox or a contradiction. You know, an American cowboy wearing African masks, which I also kind of found a bit funny.
Juncker's work, I think, is characterised by an embrace and an awareness of hybridity and cultural complexity, but also, more profoundly, I would say, by a signature wit. I'm Eko Eschen, I'm a writer and a curator. So to look at one work, for instance, Cowboy Angel 2, the central figure here, it looks like the Yul Brynner figure from The Magnificent Seven. He wears a black hat. He has a revolver in his hand. He has a gun belt on. His hand is poised above the pistol. He's about to take a shot. I think Juncker is doing a few different things here. He's thinking about the legacy of the cowboy in the Western imagination. In cowboy films, these were presented as archetypal heroes, figures who rode out and dominated the landscape. But of course, we know that the landscape that they rode across is not a Pacific landscape. It's not an unoccupied landscape. But from our contemporary perspective, we can imagine the cowboy not as a figure who owns these great plains, but a figure who's an interloper. In fact, in land that's already occupied by Native Americans. So to some extent, a cowboy becomes an ambiguous figure. But the introduction of wings onto the cowboy suggests maybe a route towards a reinvesting hope and faith and possibility. Can a cowboy be a sainted figure? Can a cowboy be an angelic figure? He's rescuing Yul Brynner. He's rescuing all these other cowboys of myth and imagination, John Wayne, Gary Cooper, they're all here, but they're all Juncker's version. They're all filtered through his gaze.
I mean, to me, it's like a splicing of identities together, making, as you said before, making a modern figure. That the cowboy and the wings are very meaty. They remind me of Piero della Francesca wings, that proper angel wings that have been studied from birds, perhaps. You make the whole figure look like one identity, even though it's a complete fusion of the cowboy, the angel wings, the African mask. You're creating this new identity.
Yes, I mean, I think it's, you know, you'll see that throughout a lot of my work. There's always a degree of paradox or a meeting of opposites or try to clash a number of ideas into one, which obviously might also be connected to my own time and in the context of actually postmodernism and the whole idea of juxtaposing a lot of ideas, you know, to create a new one.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what I can see in the foreground of this print is a very grainy texture on the horse.
Yes.
So this is where the woodblock comes
in.
Yeah,
so that's where the woodblock comes in, the grain on the horse, yeah.
And further up, it's like tongues of fire going into the sky, this this patterning at the top, orange and magenta and gold, but also strips of what looks like the Financial Times newspaper and batik.
Yes, yes. So again, that the Financial Times is sort of collapsing, so the kind of Western economic power against the sort of quote unquote, you know, ethnic expression and the relationship of power to the colonies, you know, so that so far I kind of used there the Financial Times to represent that kind of global Western economic power.
And the batik, the fabric, has literally been cut into the surface of the print, I think.
Yes.
Because they look quite flush.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the actual fabrics are used in those prints, which also gives it another kind of texture and just makes it kind of more interesting. Surface.
Totally central to Yinka's work is the batik fabric. And the obvious thing on a print would be to print the pattern. But actually, he liked the idea of this physicality, this actual real fabric. So he and Pete came up with this idea whereby there were certain areas of each composition where he wanted the fabric to be on the print. But of course, if you cut fabric and collage it on top, you get a frayed edge where it's cut. And it kind of in some way takes away from the image. You become too aware of the edges. So on each individual print, the areas where the fabric is applied is cut out by hand with a scalpel. And then very simply, the fabric is collaged from behind, which gives this amazingly beautiful clean edge, but means you've got this actual fabric collage on the print. And it's always fascinating when you show people these prints because they love that. And then you turn the print over. And of course, on the back as well, there's this wonderful fabric collaged on the back. And this was something we'd never done before as a print publisher. And it was just a very simple, very elegant solution to how can we incorporate this real fabric into a print. And of course, it plays to his wider practice where he's making quilts, he's wrapping actual sculptures in fabric. So it totally played to what he wanted to do.
Yinka's use of batik began while he was at art college in London, and the fabric informed his earliest paintings and sculptures. Behind us in the studio are several shelves that vibrate with multicoloured batik.
It's got literally every single colour of batik, hundreds of different patterns. Some have got gold foil on them, some are lime green and red, others turquoise and pink. They're really vibrant, all very neatly folded.
Batik has become a leitmotif for everything he wants to say about identity, politics, colonialism and post-colonialism.
The fabric then became a metaphor for all those, concerns.
A very loaded metaphor.
Yes. But then also, it's also important to stress that even though the work may be political, as somebody who was actually trained as a painter, the aesthetic concerns are also central to my practice. And, you know, yes, there may be some dark messages, but that's also coupled with some exuberance.
Printmaking is a very, very different practice. Not all artists can do it. Not all artists make successful prints. And sometimes it takes some years to establish a print practice, but he nailed it straight away.
Unstructured Icons from 2018 is a series of six woodblock relief prints. I unwrap some of them in the studio, carefully removing the archive paper that protects them before laying them out on the table in front of us.
This is a series in which I use a number of iconic, powerful figures. So they're kings and queens, and that's Henry VIII, which I thought would be humorous to put, to give him an African mask.
There's a rethinking of Velázquez's portrait of Pope Innocent X and the broad, square shoulders of Holbein's Henry VIII. In every print, Yinka has superimposed an African mask onto each Western face.
Again, it's just that sort of playing with power and sort of reducing that. And there's a degree of humour in it, and it's also a most unexpected thing.
And we have a woman here whose hair is bigger than her body, I think. Her wig.
Yeah, it was kind of fashionable at one point to have these ridiculous wigs and really big and, one of the kind of, I guess, funny manners of aristocrats. It's also a way to express the indulgence of the aristocracy. But by kind of rather feeling threatened by it, because of course we also know, unfortunately, that that period also coincided with the height of enslavement of Africans as well, which is actually a very serious issue. So, but underpinning such a serious issue is a kind of a light looking, you know, a light way to handle it.
Yinka's work eschews moralizing. It's more interested in his plays of power and position and status and hierarchy, and also things that often go unspoken in Britain to do with race, sometimes to do with sexuality. Think about this in relation to Africanness, in relation to the histories of slavery and settler colonialism. And think about the complicated paths that Yinka's opening up through these works, the complicated paths where we see not black, not white, not even grey, but colour, complexity, pattern, boutique, all of these things in play at once.
The colours are very vibrant and the prints are lovely to look at, but I think the power, the impact of your work never is far away. And they relate very strongly to the sculptures like Scramble for Africa, where you have these figures around a table based on a photograph of Western men literally carving up Africa in the 1880s. But you've number one, taken their heads away, a kind of French Revolution style, and then clad them in batik African fabric. So you these prints really feel like they connect up with works like that, that sense of bringing history, mashing history together, but teaching us about it at the same time.
I think these works are archetypal in that sense, in terms of his ability to play with history, to play with reference, to play with past and presence, and offer something that's more than the sum of its parts.
Something that's in these prints and the prints on the wall, in the plates I can see on the bookshelf in front of us, is the diamond or the harlequin print. And to me, that makes me think of Picasso, who I know floats around behind these prints.
Yes, I mean, the harlequin, you know, that's also a reference to modernism. And that's also, and Picasso was well known for using that. But it's also a reference to, because the harlequin is a form of jester or kind of a trickster. You know, so that's also the kind of trickster aspect, you know. And then it's also kind of repetitive geometric pattern. And repetition is used a lot in music, which actually, there's something quite pleasing about that obsessiveness and that repetition.
It's a kind of syncopation that you can use.
Yes.
In terms of the prints themselves, they're incredibly complex to make. They required very, very intricate wood carving to the extent that when we're doing the exhibition, we're actually going to show some of these wood blocks, because in their own right, these wood blocks are amazing. I mean, they're just such beautiful things. Because the way you make a wood block is each area of colour, each shape requires a different area to be cut. So when you get very, very intricate shapes with a lot of detail, that can become very, very fiddly to cut, ink, and then print. So they really are a tour de force of printmaking as well as image making.
One of Yinka's most arresting woodblock prints is Mayflower Allflowers from 2020. He came up with the idea when he was asked to take on a commission in Boston to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the landing of the Pilgrims in America on the Mayflower. In the print, the ship is under full sail, but each of the canvas sails has been replaced with contrasting pieces of batik fabric. Exploding from the top of the ship is a colourful bouquet of pink and purple flowers. And written across the cloudless background, in Yinka's own handwriting, are the words Mayflower, All Flowers.
Yes, so this is actually a reject. It was rejected for something else.
But the idea?
Well, so I was commissioned to do a mural in Boston, in the US. And that was my idea. And, you know, because of the kind of, you know, Black Lives Matter and the debates in America, around race, I decided to actually produce an inclusive version of the Mayflower, which is a significant icon for American history and culture. But I was told that it would be too controversial because the world is huge. I mean, it's like in the center of the city, and it's, you know, really huge, you know, several stories high. And I wanted to make this bold statement. So I, you know, put this flower. You know, it's just a painting of the boat and some nice flowers. You know.
Except the sails are made of African batik.
Yeah. And then I was told it's just too controversial. I couldn't do it.
I went to the studio. We went for it. It was a regular meeting. We were talking about possible future projects. And as part of the conversation, Yinka said, oh, well, you know, we did the commission. I did the image for them. It was this drawing of the Mayflower. They've deemed it to be too controversial. Ironic, really, because they knew what they were getting into when they commissioned Yinka Shonabare to do an image. And I looked at it and I said, Yinka, it's too good an image just to ignore. I mean, it's such a powerful image. And also, it's such a Yinka Shonabare image. I said, well, let's make it as a print. And immediately he said, great, let's do it.
And so, yeah, so my message still got out through the prints, but I never actually got to do the mural.
The wonderful thing about his printmaking is there's a democracy to it. Now, it's in all these different places all over the world. I mean, we've sold examples to a hospital. So all the people visiting the hospital are going to get to see it. A fantastic school in North London has bought a copy to display, and it's become a talking point for the students there and the teachers. Museums have bought it, and obviously a lot of private collectors have bought it. It's upstairs in a bedroom. So it's something I wake up to every day and see, and then see it just before I go to sleep at night.
So we've just unveiled the third series, Modern Magic, and a work that came at the end of that, Modern Magic in Pink. This series feels like there's a change from the last two. So the last two, you had the Western subject, the cowboy or the aristocrat or the king,
yeah,
covered with an African mask. Yeah. But here the African mask is the start. This is the subject of the work.
Yes. I think I did a show in which I was looking more closely at Picasso's collection of African art and the contribution of Africa to modernist aesthetics. And I wanted to kind of celebrate that. And I wanted to look at the, you know, the magic in modernism, or where did that magic come from?
The masks and the title, Modern Magic, refer to the appropriation of African art by European modernists such as Picasso, as in his Demoiselles d'Avignon. Artists, like Picasso, lifted elements of African art and used them in their own work. They also studied the ingenious way African artists articulated form. Yinka's use of magic in the title refers to how this art was once viewed, as Echo Eschen explains.
Because even as Picasso and his peers were celebrating and collecting these masks, they also understood them in limited terms. They understood these works as fetish works, as works that were symbolic of the magic and the mystery and the dark heart of Africa. To that extent, modernists were hidebound, really, by their own cultural worldview. They couldn't ultimately understand them as art. They could only understand them as art within their own art-making practice. So modern magic offers a return to those histories. But the whole goal, I think, of the series is to overturn some of these historic hierarchies of people and power, of art versus craft, to offer a more complicated reading of those, but fundamentally a reading that returns agency and power to the masks themselves, rather than situating them exclusively within the gaze and the worldview of those modernist artists.
I wonder, because in your print series, the overarching theme are these masks that appear early on top of a figure, and then later on as the subject matter itself. And it feels like in the prints you're claiming that identity back for Africa.
Well, you see, the double-edged sword there is that actually all of the masks I've used are in the collections of a lot of European modernist artists. And that whole process started because of, you know, George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. And I thought, actually, you know, people of African origin have always made huge contributions to global culture, international culture. And Western modernism itself was also hugely inspired by African art. And we know that, you know, Picasso had a big collection of African art, and also the Dada movement and the Surrealist movement also inspired by African art. Man Ray, you can name, a number of them. And so this is a way of saying, actually, that culture of African people is significant, and it's also, you know, that culture has made a significant contribution to international modernism.
Without African art being appropriated by Western artists, there would be no modernism in the way we know it today.
Yes, I mean, it would have evolved very differently. And I think that, you know, that does need to be recognised.
This series is from 2021, but it feels like there's a standalone print called Modern Magic in Pink, which we also have out, which is a vast, huge print. And we have 7 masks now clustered together on this one. And this feels like a culmination of this series, but also as if it's leading on to the next series in where multiple masks appear. When you made it, did it feel like that? Did it feel like there was more to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's more like kind of bringing all of the different masks I've used together, but also creating a non-conventional composition as well. You know, because another thing I do enjoy is, you know, composition. And, you know, I can either choose to use a Western perspective with a vanishing point and all of that, or I can disregard everything I know about perspective and then just recreate something that breaks the rules of conventional perspective and does something else.
Mm. Yeah, because these heads float on a flat ground, on a beautiful patterned ground, where, like, the batik makes flames underneath them. But ultimately, they sort of sing off the page.
Yes, you know, so it's also a way to, because also a lot of the things I challenge are not just simply political, they're also formal as well, and they're kind of formal practices in art and even colour. You know, what colours would be acceptable to use together, what colours won't be. So it's also, you know, radicalism through form as well as content.
Yinka has been incorporating African masks into his prints ever since he began working with Thumbprint Editions 6 years ago. But recently, he started remaking the masks themselves. I can see a few on a bright yellow table from where I'm sitting. Each one is an exact replica of the African masks that inspired Western artists, including Constantin Brancusi and Hannah Hock. The masks have been scaled down and cast in resin, then hand-painted with Yinka's trademark batik patterns in small editions.
They're all based on traditional African masks, which have a lot of power behind them, chosen by Yinka purposefully. But actually, when they're covered with the batik, the painted batik, it's very hard to read the features at all. This one looks like it has red coral growing over the face of it with lime green flowers. And another one is pale blue with a twisting vine and purple flowers growing on it.
They're very appealing objects. They're very tactile as well. And we're going to show them for the first time at the Armory Show in New York. And I mean, I already know from the odd person that's seen them that they're going to be hugely successful. They're the kind of thing you just want to have on your bookshelf in your home. But they speak, like all his work, they're made up of many layers, both physical layers, but also metaphorical layers.
So I'm looking at one particular work, which references a work by Man Ray, a photograph by Man Ray called Noire et Blanche from 1926. So in this work, this is a famous Man Ray work, we see two things. We see this African mask, and which originates from Côte d'Ivoire. And next to it in the Man Ray photograph, we see a model called Kiki de Montparnasse. She is lying her head on her side. She's holding the African mask. There's a playfulness here. The work is called Noire et Blanche, black and white. It's a white woman. It's an African mask. It's two different ideas of beauty, a Western ideal of beauty, an African ideal of beauty. But there's also something slightly toe-curling, slightly fetishistic about this way of looking at the African mask and African culture and identity in general as something that is a clear contrast, a clear other, a clear strangeness, a clear alienness in comparison to a Western ideal of beauty. In Yinka Shainabara's hands, we arrive in a different place. We rescue the mask. We place it on a plinth, but we assert its sophistication through the use of his signature patterns, his colours, batik patterns. We understand this mask as part of the world, as speaking to the world and coming also already out of sophistication. I think this work speaks so eloquently of what Yinka can do. He takes a proposition, he takes a moment of history, he revisits that history, he offers us another perspective, another way to see, another way to remember, another way to look further from there, both back in time and into how we might regard these histories and collisions of the West and Africa, how we might think about those into the future as well.
You've been listening to Making a Mark from the Christea Roberts Gallery, presented by Charlotte Mullins. To find out more about Yinka Shonibari and the work we've been discussing, please visit www.christearoberts.com.